All right. The Honorable Court, the United States Court of Appeals for the First Circuit is now in session. All persons having any business before this honorable court may draw near, give their attendance, and they shall be heard. God save the United States of America and this honorable court. Court is in session. You may be seated.
Welcome.
Judge, if you're ready, I can go ahead and get us on the record.
Yeah, please do.
Thank you. Today's cases will be called as previously announced, and the times will be as allotted to counsel. The first case today is number 21-1746, Richard Lee Pava versus Patricia Coyne Fagg. And Attorney Dio, please introduce yourself for the record to begin.
May it please the court. I am Attorney Sonia Dio, and I am here representing Richard Lee Pava. If I may request 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
You may. Go ahead.
Mr. Pava has brought 3 claims against the Rhode Island Department of Corrections that is sued by their director, Patricia Coyne Fagg. These counts all arise out of the enactment of a fee scheme that sets forth the amount that should be charged for copying. 5 cents for a front page copy, 10 cents for a 2-page copy. It is our contention that under Rhode Island General Laws 4256-38, that in order to enact that fee schedule, there had to be a public hearing before that. And as a result, because that was not done, these fees were enacted alter vires.
Do I understand correctly, counsel, what your due process claim is for failure of the director and the department to comply with that statute?
The due process claim is in part because Mr. Pava tried to file a grievance challenging the amounts that were being charged him because that money was being taken out of his account. And RIDOC then failed to give him any procedure whatsoever. In our briefs, we talk about how the district court...
So just to follow up on that, the hearing that you were talking about earlier for passage of the requirement is not the hearing that you're claiming was denied. That's the predicate for the due process claim.
No. There should have been 2 hearings. Let's put it that way.
Okay, and the due process claim hearing is the grievance hearing. And what is the legal hook for the challenge to the failure to have the hearing on the rule itself? Is that a First Amendment claim? Is that a state law claim? Is that both?
We have a First Amendment claim on that, and I have a taking claim on that.
Okay, and there's no state law claim?
Not that we brought.
Right. Okay.
Right. So, I'm just going to jump to that if I can.
Which is that?
As far as the takings claim, if I could. With respect to the takings claim, essentially Mr. Pava is alleging that because these amounts were taken out of his account without the director following the proper promulgation of that regulation and it then being filed with the Secretary of State, that he has been deprived of his funds. And in this instance, there's been no discovery in this matter that would allow the court to make a determination as to whether the amounts taken were reasonably related to the copying costs.
Isn't it undisputed that he knew before he procured the copying services that he would be charged 5 cents per page?
It's not disputed. He did know that.
So how do you get it? I mean, suppose I've got my credit card on file at FedEx and I walk in and there's a sign that says copying 5 cents per page and I say, give me these 10 copies, and they give me these 10 copies and then they charge my account and and I say, don't charge the account, and they charge it. I don't think that's a theft by FedEx. I knew I was going to have to pay five cents a page. And so for similar reasons, I don't see why it would be a taking by the prison that they said, here's this copying service. If you want to use it, it's 5 cents per page. He uses it and then objects to being charged 5 cents per page.
And I would agree if he was an ordinary citizen on the street. In other words, I agree with your FedEx analogy. However, in this instance, this is a prisoner. In order to access legal materials, he has to put in a request to have them copied and provided to him. So in order for him to bring this action, an action challenging his sentence, an action challenging any number of...
But the official that took the money from the account was acting pursuant to the rule, correct?
Acting pursuant to a rule that wasn't properly
promulgated. I understand that, but was acting pursuant to the rule.
Correct.
So how do you get a takings violation from the fact that the rule is invalid? I'm not quite following that. Why wouldn't that just be a state law violation?
Well, so let me go to that, too. When we initially filed this action, when Mr. Paiva initially filed this action, the Civil Death Act was in effect at Rhode Island, which meant that he, as a life prisoner, could not actually go to state court and file a claim, except under federal law. During the pendency of this matter, I'll admit that has changed. We had a decision come down.
So what I'm saying, don't you have recourse under state law for the exact claim that you're making? I mean, in the sense that if you want to challenge the rule as being illegal, you can do that under state law, can't you?
He could at this point, but there's a problem with that. And the problem with that is that this action was filed, I'm going to say sometime in early 2000. I don't have the case number in front of me. There's no tolling act in Rhode Island that applies to his claims, which was one of the issues with the Civil Death Act. So what would happen if this went back to the district court and was dismissed, because it's where it was initially filed, is that period of time wouldn't be added to a statute of limitations anywhere. So essentially 2 years of his claim would be gone.
Well, I don't understand why his claim would be gone. Is he still incarcerated and still subject to the copying charges if he wants something copied?
Mr. Paiva is still incarcerated.
Yeah. So why would his claim be gone? You could dismiss this case today without prejudice because the case has never been answered responsibly. No answer filed.
I agree that we could dismiss this case today.
Without prejudice, yes.
Okay. But as I said, the problem is what that does with the statute of limitations. And the U.S. District Court in Rhode Island is not clear on how that would apply.
Why is there a statute of limitations? Mr. Paiva could make an allegation, presumably credibly, that he wanted to copy a document tomorrow.
And
start a new course of action, which would be identical to this course.
Well, are you saying it's for the past copying charge is where the statute of limitations problem arises? Yeah, but has the statute of limitations run on that claim?
Mr. Paiva has been in prison for many years, so yes, I would say for 2 years of that it's run.
Well, but how long is the statute of limitations?
Okay, so Rhode Island's a little weird. It's either 10 years or 20 years.
Okay, so what you're saying is what he was deprived of is 2 years of a statute of limitations.
Correct.
Well, I'm not sure quite whether that's a taking.
Okay, but the money taken by the...
What I'm saying is that what effectively has happened, if I'm following you, is that for the past money taken, your claim is that it was taken pursuant to an illegal action for which there was no recourse, which you're then saying makes it effectively a taking, okay, under state law. And you're saying that normally, for a person not in prison, if that happened, they'd have 10 to 20 years to be able to do it, whereas you have 8 to 18.
Correct.
So it's not clear to me that that deprivation is a taking. Do you see what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying, but...
But if that's the substance of the claim, if that's the reality of the situation, that's not the takings claim that's before us.
It is. I believe it is. I'm out of time.
What do you want? I don't know if either of my colleagues, just on the grievance hearing, if you could just, the procedural due process claim, if you could just address that briefly.
Sure, very quickly. Mr. Paiva put in a grievance to challenge the fact that this policy was being enforced when it wasn't properly promulgated. And the long and the short of it is he was given no grievance procedure. He attempted on at least two or three different occasions to put forth a grievance, and RIDOC refused to receive it.
And just on that point, does that run into the same basic question, which is under this, was he able to get state law recourse for the violation of the grievance procedure? And we go through the same exact analysis?
Same circle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Attorney Dio. At this time, would Attorney Anderson please come up and introduce himself on the record to begin?
May it please the court, Julie Anderson, on behalf of the Rhode Island Department of Corrections and Director Patricia Ann Fake. The simple fact before the court is that this is not a constitutional case. This is an issue where plaintiffs sought to obtain something from the Department of Corrections and paid a small fee for that. The Department of Corrections has various different things that inmates are allowed to purchase from them, whether it be through the commissary, phone cards, and copy. That's one of them. The inmates are well aware of the copying costs. It's published within the policy. They're also told when they try to make copies that they will be charged.
But the problem is that the plaintiff alleges that the copying charge and the rule under which it is imposed are unlawful. And so what we're struggling with is what's the proper way to test that. Is it by a constitutional claim, or is it by some grievance procedure, or by some state law cause of action?
In answer to that, Your Honor, I would say that it would be a state law claim. And for that, I would say two things. One, the only court that has come and said that, let me back up a little bit. The district court found that copying costs do not fall under Rhode Island law 425638. That is the only court that has come out and made that determination, saying that copies are not pursuant to that, would not be pursuant to that statute, because it is not related to their confinement. Because of that, the only way for him to get what he is seeking would be to go to state court and have the state court or the Rhode Island State Supreme Court come to a determination that this statute doesn't apply to copying.
Right, could he bring that state law claim?
Yes.
And what about the civil death statute? What's the import of that?
Nothing. At this point, it's been found unconstitutional by the Rhode Island Supreme Court, number one. Number two, during when this case was originally brought, he never even tried. He didn't file anything in the state court. There was no case that was dismissed because of the civil death statute. He just simply said, I don't have recourse. As a matter of fact,
But he would have had to get the civil death statute struck down in order to have filed, correct?
Not necessarily. He could have filed, and then it could have been struck down.
That's what I'm saying. He would only be able to succeed in the filing if he could also get it struck down. So the state of Rhode Island law was that it was prohibited. Was it struck down under Rhode Island Constitution or the Rhode Island or the federal Constitution?
Rhode Island Constitution. And again, I state that he didn't try. He could have filed and said, oh, well, it's barred by the civil death statute, and then attempted to go to federal court because then he would be without state court remedies. But by not trying, he has not established a due process. In addition, with regard to
the grievance rules, which I think of as the Morris rules, are the state courts have assumed jurisdiction over appeals from them. Did the civil death statute ever apply? Had it ever been applied to bar grievance proceedings in the state courts?
Not that I'm aware.
No, I'm not aware of it either. So
the civil death statute's relevant to the possible requirement of a hearing for the rule as opposed to the grievance. Is that the idea? We've got two different hearings that are being talked about.
Yes.
There's the public hearing for the adoption of the rule, and then there's the individual hearing for the grievance. You're saying that the civil death statute did not preclude a state court from hearing an appeal or challenge to the failure to provide the grievance that was required under Rhode Island law, if any was required, any hearing, correct? But you are acknowledging that at the time of the actions involved here, at least the Rhode Island civil death statute prohibited any state law challenge to the, unless you could get the civil death statute struck down as unconstitutional, any challenge to the failure to provide the public hearing. Is that right?
I wouldn't say it's as simple as that, Your Honor.
Okay.
Only because I've had, this particular inmate is quite litigious, and I've had several cases with him over the course of my career of over 10 years. The fact that he never even tried to go to state court under the 4256-38 to say that these copying fees were being put in place without the proper public hearing, the fact that he didn't even try to do that, I think it negates his claims. With regard to the grievance process...
Just stepping back, just answering my question, though, regardless of your view on that, the civil death statute would or would not have been a bar to a suit to challenge the failure to provide the public hearing?
The simple answer is yes.
Okay.
However, I have cases with him pending in state court that should be barred pursuant to that statute prior to it being overturned, and they are still pending in the state court. So while the simple answer is yes...
I take it he's never won in any of them.
Not yet.
Yeah. Okay.
With regard to the grievance process, the simple fact is we have a grievance procedure that has been approved by the district court on numerous occasions. And the biggest problem in this case is he didn't follow the grievance process, number one. Number two, he says in the complaint...
When you say he didn't follow the grievance process, this is on a motion to dismiss. And he's alleged in his complaint that he filed grievances and they were rejected. So how can we go outside the complaint and say he didn't follow the grievance process?
Correct, Your Honor, but at the same time he filed in his complaint that he exhausted his administrative remedies.
Right.
He couldn't have exhausted his administrative remedies if he didn't go through the grievance process. In addition, he
He's alleged that he filed the grievances. You could make these points on a motion for summary judgment or something like that, but on a motion to dismiss, we're confined to the allegations of the complaint, the well-pleaded allegations of the complaint. And the complaint in this case says that he filed grievances on, I think, two occasions and heard nothing. Or they were rejected once and heard nothing the other time, something like that.
With regard to that, Your Honor, I would say two things. One, the complaint is ambiguous on its face because he alleges this, but then he says he exhausted his administrative remedies.
The claim of exhaustion is that he did what he could, but then they barred him.
Yeah, he filed the grievance.
Yeah, what's he supposed to do?
That's the way I read it.
Yeah, you can't say on the one hand we're going to prevent you from having the hearing, and then when he says, "Okay, well then I've exhausted," you said, "Well, you didn't exhaust because we prevented you from having the hearing."
He still had state law claims. He still could have gone to state.
That's not an exhaustion point, though.
Not an exhaustion.
Yeah. So then that's his procedural due process argument, which is. But what's? Let's do it this way. Imagine the complaint properly says, "I tried to file a grievance. State law gives me the grievance procedure, but when I actually tried to implement it, they prohibited me from having it." In your view, if those are the way we read the complaint, why does he lose on the procedural due process claim?
Because he maintains state law remedies under...
And that's dependent on the argument that the civil death statute would not have prohibited him from bringing a state law challenge to the failure to comply with the obligation to give him a grievance?
Correct. And the fact that he didn't try destroys that claim that he did not have procedural due process.
I thought you also had an argument that he didn't have a federal constitutional right to a grievance process here over...
I don't believe I argued that, Your Honor. I said that under this case, he doesn't have a due process claim in this matter because what he did or what happened in this case is that he requested something be made, as your don't know if it was King Bills or FedEx, an analogy was, he requested that something be made, we made it, and he received it.
Let me just try one thing, I think I understand the premise of your argument, but let me just say, if I took away that premise, whether you still have an argument as to you can win, okay? Suppose it was my view that to bring a procedural due process challenge when you're denied any state law pre-deprivation process to property. Suppose it was my view that if state law does not permit you to challenge the denial of the hearing that state law entitled you to pre-deprivation, you don't have to file in state court to lose on the ground that we don't provide any pre-deprivation challenge in order to bring your procedural due process challenge in federal court. Okay? So if that's right, then the fact he didn't bring the suit in state court isn't fatal, as long as he can show that it would have been futile to bring the suit because, in fact, state law barred any state law challenge. So if that's all correct, why does he lose on the procedural due process claim?
What I would say to that is, in order to get to the pre-deprivation due process claim, it has to be found that 4256.38 applies to legal copies. The district court, the only court that has made that determination, says that it does not. My interpretation, my reading of the statute, says that it does not. So anything that he would need would be a post-deprivation due process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. At this time, Attorney Dio, please reintroduce yourself back on the record to begin.
Attorney Sonia Dio for the appellant. Just to try to clean up a couple of things. One of the documents that was filed with the initial complaint here at page 43 of the appendix is a statement from DOC legal counsel, in fact, saying that these regulations were promulgated under the statute at issue, which is 4256.38, which it's alleged they were not. But counsel says, in fact, that is the authority for that. As far as addressing some of what you just went back and forth with my brother counsel for, I would encourage you to take a look at the decision that was rendered by the Rhode Island Supreme Court on March 2nd, 2022 in the Zapp versus Rydock matter, because in that decision it very clearly states that prior to that time there was no action that a plaintiff could bring in state court if they were subject to the Civil Death Act.
Counsel, to what extent, if at all, was the Civil Death Act raised before Judge McElroy in the district court?
It is raised in the initial briefing, and it is an argument that I made on behalf of Mr. Piva.
In what, and in what sense? To what point did you address the argument?
Well, the argument was made saying that essentially there was no ability to process his grievance because it was denied, and he had no right to go forth under state law due to the Civil Death Act.
If the charge had been 1 cent per page, would you have exactly the same claim that you're advocating
today? Actually, no, I would
today?
Not. The record has information in it that suggests that a 1 cent a copy is the actual cost that should have been levied, 2 cents for a double-sided copy. And I want to be clear, just one other thing before I run out of time here, which is that it seems like, may I just continue? It seems like it's de minimis, but even in the appellate documents here, I did a quick math. It's 250 pages that I've got before me. That's $25. So it's not necessarily de minimis. Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes argument in this case. Thank you, counsel.